Blog Talk Radio. dark and fun and intriguing poetry for every show, and now we're on the dark show. And so tonight's poetry, Rex and I ran a contest with album covers of the heavy metal artists that include Annihilator, Immortal, Amsterdam, Amon Amarth, Creator, Megadeth, Anthrax, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Slayer, Metallica, and of course Black Sabbath. And you know what better way to start a Halloween week dark show than with some Black Sabbath? And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right. What's doing?
Well, I am just getting ready to have some good old-fashioned dark fun, you know, and all that good stuff. Hanging out with you, maybe some other cool poets, you know, just chilling. You know, I've switched from black tea to water, so I won't be getting any more caffeine. I've got to get to bed at a decent time because I'm just that boring. But, I have to say, you know, because the thing with Halloween week is everybody's doing not super dark topics, but in general, like, dark topics. It's to be expected. It's Halloween week. It's when, you know, all the ghosts and goblins and spooky things come out. And so, you know, as the dark show, you got to say, okay, what can I do to match everybody and be dark? And so, you know, it came to me that where do you see some of the darkest art? I mean, you know, of course you can just Google like dark, horrifying art and you find great choices on the internet. But I thought, you know, the heavy metal album cover art is, I thought, really a great place to head to. And, of course, I had to, you know, go with some of the classics. And some of them weren't all particularly scary. Like, you know, like we have Judas Priest Screaming for Vengeance, which, if anybody remembers that cover, it's got, like, the red sun and the robot-type eagle. And then even, like, Metallica, Master of Puppets, which is, like, a classic album cover that most people know. It's, you know, it's got the rows of crosses attached to the Metallica, like with puppet strings. So it's not overtly, you know, overly grisly or dark, but there's kind of it is dark, but in a more subtle, like make you think type way, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, the Black Sabbath first album definitely was a dark album cover, especially with that the background of the old house and the what appears to be a witch, or at least a pagan image woman on the front.
Absolutely. See, I actually thought that was Ozzy Osbourne himself on the front. But, yeah, I guess you're probably right. It probably is like a witch or a pagan. Yeah, no, you're right. And that was, I honestly, I you know, Black Sabbath to me is just one of the all-time best, you know. Right out of the gate, they knew right away that it seems to me anyways, and I haven't read this, but, and you know, if you know more than I do, speak up, but it seems to me like right out of the gate with their first album, they knew that the art cover sets the tone for how people, you know, it grabs people's attention and it sets the tone. I mean, obviously you have to have good music underneath.
It was part of the times. Vietnam was going on, so a lot of their music rolled around that. They took the name of their band from a movie they liked, which was Black Sabbath, with Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi back in 1905 or something. And the dark angle of the music kind of had to hit that tone because Tony Iommi was a left-handed guitarist, but he lost two of his, well, not lost two, he lost the tips of a couple of his fingers on his neck hand. So he used a downtone tuning to help ease up the strength of the strings so he could do a little bit more bending, which kind of added to the tone of what they had. And he had somebody made him a couple of over finger guards, which kind of consisted of a thimble with leather strapping, which he strapped onto his fingertips, which allowed him to give him almost full fingertip workage again, but he still didn't have that bendable angle with the very first joint to the finger. So he relied on down tuning to help with his music.
That's actually, I did not know that. That is really cool to learn. It's always amazing to me people who you know, overcome a handicap and you know, because there are actually quite a few famous musicians out there who have overcome a handicap to become like such well-known musicians in their field. And so that's really cool to know. But and of course I think to give kudos to the artists. Now, the interesting thing about the albums is some of the albums, in the contest, every album that we put up as a prompt, we credited the artist. Now, some of it, the artist came up with the concept, you know, and then, you know, did the artwork after the band's approval. But in the other ones, the band themselves or one of the band members came up and drew the artwork. So, as far as Creepy goes, I have to say, I didn't have time to write for this. Plus, I didn't need to because we had plenty of rights. Iron Maiden's Fear the Dark was Fear of the Dark. What is probably one of my favorites, along with Metallica and Black Sabbath. But I have to say, I do enjoy the way you're always filled with like tidbits of information there, Rex. Well, what do you say? Shall we bang the gong and get things started?
Yep. And there you go. You can kick it off with Church of the Dead by Julie Buck.
All right. Church of the Dead by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. Come to the Church of the Dead. Keep unholy the Sabbath, especially keep what's seen unsaid. Learn to listen to the smug she-ghost who guards the oppressive gates. She waits in black, cold and smug. The autumn leaves colors of dehydrated browns and oranges, like having bled out. Old white stone church, eerie and run down. The ghost lady knows she can hurt you. But be not afraid to pray this day. Fear not the wicked blowing your way. Feed on fright, bite your tongue till bloody. How grand to be alive and young. The wizard whore protects the door. Forget redemption. Here you die. Let the thunder in the sky complain before the rain. While death gloats and kicks your lame human faith till blue. Welcome to hell, loser. What the fuck you gonna do? Hear the bells? Hear the bells? The devil will get the last word. He will. But Madam Bitch in Satanic Black is always ready to sneer, and I told you so, you fucking idiot bastard. Now who are you going to kill? Lucifer let out a horror hiss. You'll do, said he, murders the ghost he's hated the most, then gets high and takes a piss. And poem, That was a great ending. I have to say, I really liked and appreciated this write. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, a couple of things. She hits on the picture nicely, but she also hits on the song itself, the title song from the album, Black Sabbath, which has that bell and the thunder and lightning that starts off the song itself. So that was a nice touch. And she also hits on The Wizard. There's a song in there that is called The Wizard. And let's see. It is a dark opening album, and I like how she's rolled in pretty much a good portion of the album itself. And well, the autumn leaves, colors of dehydrated browns and oranges, like having blood out, was a nice touch. And the old white stone church, eerie and run down. The ghost lady stuck here as a ghost lady. But Madam Bitch and Satanic Black is always ready to sneer, and I told you, you fucking idiot bastard. Now, who are we going to kill? I like the back end because Ben gets high and takes a piss. There's kind of a notation there to Sweetleaf off of their third album, Masters of Reality. So that was a nice little ending touch.
That was. Plus, it kind of made fun of the fact that, you know, he got high and drunk and pissed on the Alamo, which you know, I liked that. It was a nice twist at the end. It was an unexpected twist, and I liked that. I don't know, I like you said, she really touches upon the picture well, plus the title song, which was actually, I considered that song for the intro song, because with the bells and, you know, the dark lyrics, but I really just found I liked the
well,
the
that
song.
Hits on the idea of the devil itself. What is this that stands before me? That starts off the song itself.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it is a really good song, and yeah, it definitely delves into the darkness. I really like how she starts going into some of the shorter lines, like, and has that repetitiveness. The ghost lady knows she can hurt you. And I also like the wizard whore protects the door, forget redemption. Here you die, let the thunder in the sky complain before the rain, while death gloats and kicks your lame human faith till blue. Welcome to hell, loser. You know, there's a real intense buildup within those lines of the confrontation of like hypocrisy. And as I said, just really a clever ending and a great, not only a great dark rite, but a great tribute rite. So, very well done. And, all right, what do you got for us next?
That would be Himalacria by William Divinum. Sacrificial lamb lying on the desk, sense his weakened breath. Architect silently withers, and numbered are the days. Crimson oceans cried, for the chapel's lost in the swarm of lices. The Adonai has died, the scream of innermost unhealed arm scars. Footsteps of the pseudo-prophet, ritual dance of the Bacchus, scarlet tears of the beloved running down the palace. And he took from 10 slayers' rain and blood.
Yep, and that was definitely a great choice and a great read there, Rex. I have to say, I'm not sure I've seen William Divinium before, but I'm really glad he entered our contest and wrote for the show. This is a short write, but impactful. I really felt like he captured the tone of the artwork and the vibe of a lot of heavy metal music itself, how it touches on cultural and almost like religious issues. Like the sacrificial lamb lying on the desk. I thought lying on the desk was a great choice to represent the idea of how we make sacrifices of our individuality by, you know, just, you know, living our lives in those cubicles. And it doesn't even have to be a physical cubicle, but rather like a, you know, it can be, but it can also be that kind of just metaphorical cubicle. I also like the imagery of Crimson Ocean's cry for the chapel's loss and swarms of lices, the Adonai has died. And I wish I had looked it up because I know, you know, there's several different names for God, Adonai being one of them. And each name has a different meaning and represents a different aspect of the character of God. So, you know, I meant to look it up because I can't all remember everything. My head's just, you know, doesn't hold that up much information. So I'll have to look that up. What's that?
Look what up?
Adonai, like what it means.
Oh, it means the Lord.
Okay.
It's out of, I think it's out of the Greek from the original Jewish text.
Yeah, yeah. But like each name represents a different aspect of God. And so it'd be interesting to see which like aspect of it, of that religion that William has represented as being died. I like also his use of pseudo-prophet, ritual dance of the Bacchus, scarlet tears of the beloved running down the palace. To me, there's a real sense of people being used and people dying for a message that is pure, for a message that has none of their good in mind, but simply the taking away of their individuality and spirit. At least that's kind of what I get from it. And I have to say, I really think as far as imagery goes, at dark imagery, he's really just did an excellent job with that. So I thought this was very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, Himalakri, crying bloody tears. So right off, you got to start that angle. Now, the thought with Adonai has died, the Lord has died. God has died. There's a kind of notion of religious turmoil. The fact that everybody's strayed so much, the sacrificial lamb kind of hits on that notion of what is being sacrificed up front. And the architect silently withers and numbered all the days. That kind of hits on the notion of the Bible through numbers. And there's you got footsteps of a pseudo-prophet that kind of hints on the sort of the Antichrist and ritual dance of the Bacchus. There again, the god of wine and hilarity, partying. So there's a touch to ritualistic twist that wander from the actual thought of faith itself, and it seems that everything is spilling blood over that which used to be cherished and is no longer cherished, because you got scarlet tears of the beloved running down the palace, palace being that sort of the church, maybe.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that's a good thought. Those are some great observations. Now, I was actually doing some Googling, some research, and listening to you at the same time. I really like what you had to say. And you're right. Right out of the gate, he sets a dark tone. Now, Adonai is one of the names of the God used in the Old Testament. It is translated as Lord with lowercase letters, but it wasn't just used as a name of God, but it was also used as a name for governing authorities, military commanders, teachers, mentors, you know, the oldest brother, and even employers and owners of servants and slaves. So I think, and this is just my thought, is that it's not just about killing a religion dying, but the dying of authority, of, you know, something. I feel like, yeah, that by using that, choosing that word, that it encompasses the idea of authority dying, if that makes sense.
Society, maybe.
Yeah, that could be. Well, guess what? We have two lovely ladies joining us. I'd like to say welcome to Kel and welcome to Felon. Glad you could both
Hello.
Join us. How's
yep,
it going?
Hello, Kel and Felon.
Hello.
Good to have you both here. And
absolutely.
I see, let's see here. Felon put, okay, I know Kel has a right on the board. Felon just put one on the board. And
cool.
So we are ready to, we'll go ahead and move on to the next right. And what do you got for us, Rex?
Haunted by Martha Gethel, and you got a stamp on it.
All right. Well, let me mosey on over there and find that. And here we go.
Haunted by Martha Gethel. I'm trapped in this house alone. I've never been on my own. Since my mommy's side I left, I've had to learn to be by myself. In this house I'm here, you see, right where that man brought me. He picked me up, it seems long ago, and he brought me here, you know. He brought me here, he hurt me bad. I miss my mommy, I'm so sad. I spend my time just crying, it seems. I cry so loud, but no one hears my scream. I cry for mommy to come here, you see. I scream for daddy to come rescue me. Since the man who brought me went away, no one has been here to this day. I'm so scared and I'm so sad here that I'll never again see mommy, I fear. My parents always tucked me in at night, and in my room they left a light. But here this house can get so dark, of the light there's not a spark. I never liked the dark, it's so true, but here in this house I've had to learn to. At night when the darkness falls, I hear calls. I hear it, I fear it so when night falls. And sometimes the house, it creaks and groans. I so wish I did not have to be alone. I am so fallen, and I'm no force. Things just have to run their course. I swear there's something here with me. Sometimes I know, eyes on me, there have to be. Then one day in front of me I saw, it scared me so. I froze in awe. There I saw what it was, you see. The man who hurt me was here with me. He is here. I see him. I know him, you know. What can I do? Where can I go? I want him gone. What can I say? I wish that he would just go away. End poem.
Great read there, Martha. Oh, my goodness. I really, the sense of fear captured in her reading was just absolutely a performance. And thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Just a reminder, everyone, if you cannot call in, but you can make a recording of your poem, that is the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Martha was inspired by the album art from Annihilator's Alice in Hell, which was actually, I think, one of our most popular prompts that people wrote to. And Kel, your thoughts?
I thought it was a very haunting, tear-jerking piece, and she read it very, very well, and she wrote it even better. I am so small, and I am no force. Things just have to run their course. It's blatantly haunting, very much so. Well done, Martha.
Absolutely, I have to agree. It's haunting, and it's emotive. And you're right; that was just a wonderful comment. And Fallon, your thoughts?
Well, what I think she brought to the table was she brought to life the words or the actual vocabulary of a child, how they would speak, not go into these grander words, but keeping it the way a child would think at that age, and not trying to seek to overcompensate in a large vocabulary. And that, to me, speaks volumes, because this piece needed that in order to capture in the hauntingness of each one, because, you know, mommy and daddy and such, because that brought you down to actually feeling that child say these things, and the fear of this child and her just wanting her mommy and daddy. And then also to the realization that she's no longer in the living. She is, you know, she is deceased, and yet she's still haunted in her being, she's still haunted in her afterlife of this man. So I think this is a great capture of that prompt. Excellent job.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the point that the vocabulary she used is one of a child, and she didn't try to go with the grandiose language. And there is time for beautiful use of complex language. There is time that it does work in poetry. But in order to capture, to give us the words, the heart of a child, you're absolutely right. It did require the speaking pattern of a child. So great observation there. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm going to roll with Fallon on this one. It is about the little girl and her haunting this house, so to speak. But I think the other end of this is the reason she's still haunted is because her tormentor has also died, and he now haunts the same residence with her. So she has no real way out anymore of anything, because she has to keep reliving the fact that he is haunting the same place she is.
Absolutely. And a lot of times, and that's a really good point too, Rex, because a lot of times in haunting stories, ghost stories, there is something that keeps them on the earth. There is something, you know, that keeps their spirit from being able to move on to the next realm. And the idea that her tormentor is also haunting the same area adds a nice deeper level to it. So again, a wonderful comment and observation. I first of all really like her that she's able to tell a story in rhyming language. I like the way she captures the imagery in the artwork and the sadness. There's it's not only sadness, it's the kind of sadness that breaks your heart, because it's the sadness of a child crying out for help. I just think this is a haunting, dark, and emotive write that was really well written in a child's voice and very well done. So excellent comments, everybody. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
Ragdolls by Kel.
Okay. Sorry. Ragdolls by Kel Smiles. The old house built a century ago a Victorian's dream of turreted splendor, a ghostly presence as childlike wanders through halls and corridors her grace once recited, stained glass a webbed lace, oaken floors now laid to rest well within, walled wainscoting dusty prints of time. Pendulum grandfathers stopped in rooms covered in long ago white coveted panels, strewn throughout, raggedy, forgotten, steeped in decaying decadence, malfeasance, neglected, molested, prone to be alone, with only the comfort of garish ragdolls, random solace, left in a bereft trail by ghostly hands, where feminine arms lovingly cuddled, no longer able in disembodied formlessness. Hence death came at 2 and 10 years, prematurely determined the child's fate. Night's gown shredded in ragged disarray, by fingers callously torn apart in rage, even against her denials in forlorn, teary fear, leaving her to wander from room to room, a ragged wraith, with nothing but worn rag dolls to comfort her presence. End poem.
Oh, bravo, Cal. I really like this. You know, it has always fascinated me, and I'm going to go ahead and snatch the first place for commenting. I'm going to call shotgun. So, it's always really fascinating to me how you can get rights from the same picture and get, like, the different ways things are seen. And I really like that you start out with describing the old house and the use of turreted splendor. I thought was wonderful. The old house built a century ago, a Victorian dream of turreted splendor. You know, this was something I mentioned on the last show, on Richard's show, was that, you know, oftentimes you need to have more than just the characters, the people as characters. You need to have the houses, the surroundings, the land as characters, as part of the story. I remember reading in this book on writing short stories that you can't just have two people or one person standing around, you know, like without describing their surroundings, because then basically what you have is two characters in the middle of a black space. But you don't give that to us. You give us this old Victorian house with its stained glass and webbed lace, oaken floors now laid to rest well within. Within our minds, we picture this. And even you begin to bring in the darkness with the line, steeped in decay and decadent maleficence. You realize with the word decadent that here are people that once lived there that watched out only for themselves, only for their own pleasures. I really like where feminine arms lovingly cuddled, no longer able and in disembodied formlessness, hence death came at 2 and 10 years, prematurely determined the child's fate. And right there, the impact of the death of the children really hits the reader hard. So, you know, I just think this is a wonderful use of imagery and a very well-told haunting tale. So very well done there. And
much appreciated, Sam.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the same thing with your last poem. I mean, my goodness, you just really bring us, you know, your last poem taking place in the swamps. You know, I just have to say, and I know I shouldn't be talking about a poem that was read 2 hours ago, but no, I just have to say that with both your poems tonight, you have really brought us into the scenery itself in a very awesome way. So kudos on that. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, let's see. The house was once magnificent, and you hit on that turreted splendor, an old Victorian place, stained glass now home to web lace, oaken floors now laid to rest well within Walt Wayne's starting Dusty Prince of Time. And it hits on that note of being empty, desolate for quite a long time. Then you hit on the word raggedy, forgotten. There is that notion of that which was left, as opposed to actually moving out of the house. Maybe the thought of that little girl dying at 12 years old was too much, so everything was kind of left in situ. So she wanders around this place and comes out as raggedy and in disarray because everything else has aged the same way. The curtains are now shredded. The dolls, which are left around, are all kind of ragged, moth-eaten, and chewed on by the mice or the rats that it rolls through. So you get this nice glowing sort of everything is aged in the same way, even the ghost, because, well, she died in the house, so it befits that as the house evolves, she does evolve with the house. So she represents everything. Once in life, she represented the house itself with everything that was good and perfect. Now in death, she is reflecting that very same thing. And you hit on that rolling out, leaving her to wander from room to room, a ragged race with nothing but worn ragged dolls to comfort her presence. So she comes out as that which the house now represents, which is something that is long overdue, forgotten, and left to rot on its own because nobody wants a piece of it anymore.
Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome.
Great observations. I like that you bring up the rats and how the rejection of the house itself. So, excellent comment. And Felon, your thoughts?
Well, as I said in the comment, and I wrote to her on a piece, was, you know, your words built that house. I mean, it's like a virtual tour with your eyes closed, all within the words that you laid down for us. Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. But really what it shows is the growth that you have, Cal. I mean, you have really grown within a poet and actually becoming a stronger and stronger with each write. And I think that you're stronger than that, too, because I think that you hold back a little too much. And I just think you should just let loose and just let your words that you already have in your head just come out, because I think you have so much to offer. And I'm glad you shared this piece with us. I think it speaks volumes to who you are and what you can bring to the table. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Felon.
You're welcome.
You too, girl.
Absolutely. We've got the wrong number.
Great. That was a great comment, Felon. And
it was.
Absolutely, absolutely wonderful observation. And all right, what do you got for us next, Rex?
Cutting the Stitched by Felon.
I wrote this like 21 minutes ago, so it's not really scary. So I wish I had it wrote scary, but here we go. Cutting the Stitched. Just before fastening the seatbelt when riding others' amusement, a piece of string is then stitched amongst the soulless pulse, woven knit tight along fingers to hell's direction, as the demonic pool threads wool over the eyes to its prey. Cloaked beneath skin seems to never commit sin, shouts, welcome to the greatest thrill of them all. Within each ticket collected, the innocence pays the price. Trapped on a repetitive cycle in the ups and downs, screaming fear, hung among wrists strung as a puppet, cyanosis clings along the lips clipped, leaving the tongue to gasp, seeking expression. Led by silence within words hemmed and being mute, heavy is the metal, banging chaos among evil's melody. End poem.
Great.
And it's on the Muppet,
the
Puppet Master.
Oh, cool. Great choice. Great choice of an album cover to write to. Awesome. I say this is great, wonderful and dark, and I'm definitely looking forward to commenting on this one. And I'm always impressed with the way you whip these like just heavy duty metaphors out within seconds. So very cool. And tell your thoughts.
Wow. This was really amazing writing, Felon. A haunted amusement park. And they fucking scare me anyway. Not the parks, just the some of the rides. This is really fantastic. Shouts, welcome to the greatest thrill of them all. Within each ticket collected, innocent pays the price, trapped on a repetitive cycle in the ups and downs, screaming fear. Oh, wow. That's just really, really dark and really deep and very well done.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And I have to agree with you, Cal. When it comes to creepy stories, putting in like the creepy and haunted like carnival ride with the carnival barker really adds to that level of horror and creepiness. And before we continue on, I'd like to welcome Wayne to the show. Welcome, Wayne.
Wayne.
Glad you could join us.
Wayne, how you doing?
Long time, bro.
Yeah, I had to wait. It's 1 o'clock your time, but 12 my time. I just turned 68, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Well,
happy birthday, boy!
Happy birthday!
Thank you. I kind of looked in the mirror and I couldn't believe I got this pretty in just 68 years.
Oh, too funny!
Sorry about you.
That's called aging like fine wine.
It is. It is. I'm getting
there
better every
go.
Year.
He intoxicates us.
And Wayne, did you get a chance to hear or to read Felon's story?
I didn't. I dialed like seven numbers to get in. I kept dialing the numbers, and I didn't hear anything. I got in, she's already done, so I didn't get to hear it. And so I'm looking over here in a second.
Okay, no problem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I got to go with some verbiage for stitched. You rolled that right through this, the sort of stitched in the first stanza, but then you roll in woven, knit, thread, wool, and again, you've got hemmed, and they all run in the same thought of the strings and everything that rolls with that, but that first stanza, a soulless pulse ends that first stanza, which is a nice hint in. Then you hit on the demonic pull threads, wool over the eyes to its prey, and then cloaked beneath skin, seen to never commit sin. So you hit on that. There's a nice inline rhyme right there, but you also hit on that thought to innocence, to that which is. Then you roll in that carnival barker, kind of welcome to the greatest thrill of them all. But the each ticket that is collected is that soul that is now collected because of whatever sin that is now being paid on the price. The puppetry angle I like too, because you also hit on cyanosis clings along lips cliff, cyanosis, the blueness, the lack of oxygen. So there's a nice little touch note to death along its way. And then you hit on leaving the tongue to gasp, seeking expression. It's kind of like you've got no lips and you're trying to offer up a thought, but you actually need your lips to help the tongue express itself in a voice that makes sense. And then you finish out with heavy as the metal banging, chaos among evil melody, which hits on that sort of that long, drawn-out pyre on which one spends their term in hell, because this is what your life is going to be done with. Each day you're born unto anew, the same fresh thought of everything that you just experienced now being reappeared on your body once more.
Very well there, Mr. Rexy, Sexy Rexy. Great job.
I like it. And you've been gone too damn long. Where you been hiding?
I've been working. I went back to work, so sorry.
Oh, okay.
Comment there, Rex. Wonderful observation. I have to say, I really like this. I like how with imagery like woven, knit, tight, along fingers to hell's direction, there's really a sense of having no control, the sense of just being pulled along in a destiny. I really like trapped in a repetitive cycle in the ups and downs, screaming fear. There really is that, you know, that whole idea of the intense fear that of knowing that you're heading to hell. And led by silence within words hemmed in being mute. And I did like how there was a real, as Rex mentioned, there was a real consistency with a lot of your metaphors, like the knit, the thread, the use of the word hemmed, you know, like it just makes, you know, you put in words hemmed in being mute, and it makes me think of like when you hem a skirt and you tuck it, the edges under. I almost get this like very visceral image in my head of somebody, you know, cutting somebody's tongue off. So,
oh my gosh, yes.
In half. Yeah, it's got that kind of like dark visceral imagery that I really appreciate. And I also really appreciate that with your ending lines, you evoked this like the sound of hell, or the sound of the tracks, or the, you know, the roller coaster, heavy as the metal, but using the words heavy and metal, you also paid tribute to the heavy metal music albums, you know, that within that are the artwork. So
I'm
very
glad you
clever
could define
there.
That, Pam. Thank you. Thank you for seeing
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah. Well, thank you for writing. I'm glad you were inspired.
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
Mr. Rex, where are we rolling to next?
Death by Metal by Wayne.
You want me to read it, or you want to play the SoundCloud?
Oh, you'll have to read it because it was
okay,
great.
Okay, I'll read it. Fine. Yeah, I did SoundCloud about 5 minutes ago, so I'll just read it. And mine is called Death by Metal. And it goes like this. Doom and death, take it heavy metal and hard. Weeping and sobbing, no in the graveyard. Bad bones bounce, killing you with six strings. That's what Metallica brings. Bloody and battered, fearful for what I saw. They spit in my face and said, kill them all. Made me a puppet. They were the master. Every time I tried to slow, they went faster. After the third vinyl, we all came home hurting. What the devil come and take away burden? Finally, with justice for all, then the world went black. Didn't have a choice. I grabbed my dick and didn't look back. Became the unforgiven. Entered the Sandman. Sad but true, driving me insane. The memories remain. What to do? First thought it was rock. Found out it was thrash. Caught a ride around my car, full of cash. Don't care if Sabbath got black, or how purple got deep. Metallica metal for 40 fucking years is the one to keep. Shaking my head so much, my hair is starting to hurt. Move the hell out of the way. Have to get out of this sweaty shirt. In.
Oh my God. That was really awesome, Wayne.
I hear a bell giggling in there.
Thank you.
That was really awesome, Wayne. I really like the way you paid tribute to some of their song titles, and just really great use of not only Metallica, but, you know, you've got other bands that you mentioned in here, like Deep Purple. That is really cool to me. But let's go ahead and get you some comments. And Rex, your thoughts.
Hang on a second. I did. I love that that ending. Has a nice little tone of funk and humor in it. But up top, you got to start out doom and death, taking heavy metal and hard, weeping and sobbing, no escape in the graveyard. Bad bones bound, kill you with six things. If you want it dark, that's what Metallica brings. A nice touch. I like that thought with the you bring in the six strings as the guitar, but you also kind of hit on that note of mask or puppet with the six strings there, which was a good run. And then the third vinyl, that was a nice touch. Justice for all, didn't have a choice, grabbed my dick and didn't look back. It's a nice another nice note that I might want to protect that. And then the thought You hit on Don't Care If Stabs Got Black or How Purple Got Deep, which was a great touch to the original thoughts to the Dogger and Black Sabbath and Deep Purple. That was cool. But you've been celebrating Metallica for 40 years, and you haven't looked back, but they do make you sweat. And my gathering note at the end there is you like to kind of do the thrash mosh pit thinking?
That's it. Get my head hurting. Get my hair hurting.
I get you.
Great comment there, Rex. And your thoughts, Felon?
He had me cracking up to the where, you know, because I commented this. I don't know if I might be wrong, but I did. I think that he just didn't have a choice, grabbed my dick and didn't look back. I think that sums up the puppet master, because he is the master of his puppet, and he tells that thing where he wants it to go and what he wants it to do. So that's what I got. I might be wrong. I might be just having 39. But I think that this right here, just, I mean, you can tell that you are a true hard rocker, or that you like Metallica and you like the big bands back in the day. And I really like what you said, your hair, shaking my head so much, my hair is starting to hurt. Move the hell out of the way. I have to get out of this sweaty shirt, because I remember my brother, you know, he'd go to these banging concerts, and he'd come in, he'd be like just ripping his sweaty shirt. He's like, oh, my God, just move, I'm hot. Please don't touch me. Just don't touch me. That just totally brought back that to me. And I think that you really encompassed what it's like to be a headbanger or enjoy the hard rock. So this, and I think that you also touched on a lot of pieces of the actual titles to songs. And I enjoy that. That shows your knowledge of the music and of the genre. So excellent job there, Wayne.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wonderful comment, Felon. I have to agree with you. There was some great humor in this, especially with that didn't have a choice, grab my dick and didn't look back, and those ending lines, move the hell out of my way, have to get out of this sweaty shirt. So excellent observations. And Kel, your thoughts.
Well, I'm not real big into the heavy metal stuff. My brother liked Metallica, though, so I have heard it, just saying. It was a very well-composed tribute to the band, and it's, you know, and how much it means, how much they meant to you and their music, and you know, how much you enjoyed it. And that's all that really matters, is how much you enjoy your chosen brand. So this is fantastic. I really like it.
Yeah, in the day, it was pretty bad, but I kind of got away from the last 15 years or some, or 20 years. You know, the third vinyl was the one that you got pictured up there. It was the one, the master of the puppets. It was the third one. And after they got through with it, there was a tour in, I think, the Netherlands. The bus went around a curve, and Burton got threw out of the bus and got killed instantly. Well, their bass player got killed. So they had to take a little break there, and they came back to the States and regrouped. But that was the way that Burton, about Burton, after their third album, he got killed. So it's kind of sad, but they all rock and roll, they all go away sometime.
Wow.
Yeah.
A history there too.
Well, thank you for that. Very, very well said.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad you added in those little extra touches. You know, and I really like that that this was a tribute right to them, and that with it you mentioned some of their, you know, song or album titles like Justice for All, and you know, Enter the Sandman, you know, and Yep, and The Unforgiven, because The Unforgiven, Enter the Sandman, Sad but True, Driving Me Insane, But the Memories Remain. Wonderful use of, you know, I like it that you use their song titles, but you use it in such a way that you create the emotions of a personal experience and a personal connection. So this is definitely very well done.
Thank you very much.
And yeah, absolutely. And, all right, where are we heading to next, Mr. Rex?
Hail Thor by Eric Benson.
All right. And we have a SoundCloud for this one. So let me go ahead and find Eric. And where is that? I know it's here somewhere. Oh, come on. Don't tell me that this was one that was missed. No, it's, we've got to have it. Sorry. There's so much to look through. Okay. For some reason, this SoundCloud got missed. So, we can either save it for another show, or you can give it a read, Rex.
Well, let me grab the next piece then. Here.
All right.
We can do this.
Sounds good. And Kel, Fel, and Wayne, really appreciated having you all here.
Yes. Twisted Wonderland Bible page.
I'm glad we're here.
All right, and who's going to give this a read?
I can read it.
There you go, Kel. Have at it, please.
Twisted Wonderland by Betty Page. Twisted Wonderland. Haunting echoes howl. Mystical darkness consumes. Ghosts and ghouls dangle. Feel them down hallways, dancing, swinging chandeliers. Windows shake from fright, rattling, smashing. Objects move across dark rooms, elevated lights. Strewn along the floor, possessed porcelain dolls stare, glaring eyes, pierce, fierce. Soft, flowing nightgowns, swirling in cool, icy winds. Swirling by Alice. Mad Hatters laughing eerily with cruel March hares sipping tainted teas. White Rabbit chasing time scurries, swift crossed checkerboards, golden watch in hand. Cheshire Cat glows high, caterpillar smokes fine green, sticky as cobwebs. Black Widow spiders crawling up her silky legs. Awaiting lush bites. Blood profusely sprays as cruel queen chops off their heads in royal gardens. Wickedly grinning, trapped in queen's labyrinth maze of this haunted house. Alice is lost, helpless, funhouse nightmare, oh, no. Living hell. No, there's no way out. End poem.
Great read, Kel, and this is an excellent Dark Rite by Betty. I like how she consistently had the Dark Alice in Wonderland motif with short, impactful lines. And Wayne, your thoughts on Betty's poem?
Oh, this is a very good poem. It's well balanced. It flows perfect. It's a great read too. It's I liked all the references she had put. She put a lot of references to, like, Mad Hatter, and went all through it and had White Rabbit. And all ever stand this, but she had some of the Cashmere Cat. She threw every bit of all the little pieces they needed to make it well. But it's a very good poem, and I like it a lot. Good job.
Absolutely, well said there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, hang on a sec. Get a little. My angle is getting. Damn, where'd it go? Ah, there it is. Well, there was a couple of things in here. She rolled into Alice really nicely, threw in the Mad Hatter's laughing eerily with cruel March hair sipping tainted teas. It was a nice touch that they're sipping tainted teas. They're probably sipping acid. And then she hits on caterpillar smokes fine green, sticky as cobwebs. That's some mighty fine stuff, sticky as cobwebs. Got some nice aroma to that stuff. So a disorder that Alice has been dropped down the rabbit hole, so to speak. The rabbit hole, though, is what she is smoking, and she's got to kind of live with the hell of the Cheshire Cat, the White Rabbit, the March Hare, and Mad Hatter roaming around in her dreams.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a great observation because, yeah, it definitely is, has those elements of Alice is definitely smoking something, and that is, as you said, what is the rabbit hole she's falling down. And so great comment there. And Felon, your thoughts?
I really think that I might be wrong, but I think what she tried to capture is the fact that Alice is haunted, so that would be like Alice in Chains, the heart, Alice in Chains, that would be the hard rock, heavy metal group, you know, how she's, Alice in Chains, like she's chained to the being haunted, or she's chained to being actually down the rabbit hole, or to actually smoking the ganja, or whatever you want to call it, the green, or whatever, that it's the Alice in Chains. I think that really shows her whimsical but also witty and intelligent right of that of the heavy metal, and then putting the Alice in Chains to Alice in Wonderland. This is a great, great writing, great job there, Betty Page.
That, yeah, absolutely. That is a great observation. You know, because it does, with her play on words, it does seem to have that nod to the group Alice in Chains, which is actually like,
right,
one of my all-time favorites from the 90s. They had some really, that guy had just one of those amazing deep voices that really just grabbed your attention and kept it. But I like how she really goes great with the dark lines strewn along the floor, possessed porcelain dolls, stare, glaring eyes, pierce. I also really like where it said, where was that? There was like spiders crawling up the legs. Oh, here it is. Black widow spiders crawling up her silky legs, awaiting lush bites. Oh, my goodness. Now, that is definitely lines to give you the heebie-jeebies. And it almost like has that like acid trip type feel to it. So just really an excellent dark write all the way through, and very well done, and great comments, everybody. And all right, Rex, back to you.
Got The Puppeteers by Diane D, and you got a SoundCloud.
Do. And let me find that. Do, here it is. And I'll go ahead and push play.
The Puppeteers by Diane D. The wooden crosses embalm the bones that don't make a sound, while the spirits of those who thought infirm that they could cheat death creep in and out, swirling up the sticks. As death climbs the ash-red blackness, tugging on the strings mockingly, are demons poorly disguised as humans, who are often referred to as puppeteers, and in their own way they carry the word. Through various platforms of paralysis, mind-controlling masses by lyrical abduction. Lyrics that transform into seizure of power, a crimping blast from Metallica's puppets. The puppeteer has sent them the words. Master of puppets, I'm pulling your strings, twisting your mind and smashing your dreams, blinded by me. You can't see a thing. Just call my name, cause I'll hear you scream. The message awakened a new kind of fear. Music mania was corrupt in this world, teaching and screeching his dominance, that there is enough grass on this earth for a cross every second, attached by strings. End poem.
great read and write, Diane. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. I really like the background music and how well balanced her performance was. And Shellen, let's start with your thoughts.
I really like this. For one, I like the music behind the actual reading. I think it really brings out the purpose behind the piece. And what really spoke to me is, as death climbs the ash-red blackness, chugging on the strings of mocking of demons poorly disguised as humans, who are often referred to as puppeteers, and in their own way, they carry the word. I love that. I think that could stand alone by itself, that verse there. I don't think it even needs any other support with the rest of the poem, because I think it's a very strong write. And I really enjoyed it, and I think she really captured the prompt very well. Excellent.
Absolutely. And you're right. That first stanza, I mean, the whole thing is strong, but that first stanza does particularly stand out with its imagery, and especially that line, infirm that could cheat death, creep in and out, swirling up sticks. And so wonderful observation and comment. And Wayne, your thoughts?
Yeah, this was wonderful. She had a great meaning in this. The music was wonderful in the background. And I think the last stanza was the best one, where she said, the message awakened a new kind of fear. Music mania was corrupting the world, teaching and screeching his dominance, that there was enough grass on this earth for a cross every second, attaching by strings. And that was a great stanza. Did a good job of this. It's kind of hypnotizing the way she was reading it so smoothly through. I was sitting there, couldn't hardly talk. I was sitting there, listening to it, and it's kind of hypnotizing. She did a great job on SoundCloud. I liked it a lot.
Absolutely. I have to agree. And hypnotizing was a great way to describe her reading. So, excellent comment. And Kel, your thoughts?
Oh, golly. As death climbs the ash-red blackness, tugging on the strings mockingly, are demons poorly disguised as humans, who are often referred to as puppeteers, and in their own way they carry the word. This is really a nice, very dark, haunting poem. Very well done. And on
Absolutely.
That note, I'm going to have to let you all go. I'm getting tired.
I understand that. Well, you have a good night, Cal.
Thank you.
You
for
girls,
calling
guys,
in.
Too. Wonderful show, Pam.
Good night, Cal.
Love y'all.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Take care. All right. And Rex, your thoughts?
Kind of mocking tone to it, a sense of we have no control over ourselves because there are others who are always pulling the strings. And the thought of the wooden crosses, nobody ever thinks of the original layout for puppets. They were pretty much a cross, and that was how they played. And to use that as the opening thought, that which is both control and the life and death of us is a smart way of running this. It does give us that thought in the bottom end of this, that there is enough grass on the surface for a cross every second attached by strings, which means a new one is born every minute.
Yep. Yeah, that is a really great observation. Because it does have that mocking tone to it. And it also, as you mentioned, you know, the puppets were built like to look very much like crosses. And, you know, she captures that imagery, and I really like how she does that with the wooden crosses embalm the bones that don't make a sound. I also really liked that ending where she says, the message awakened a new kind of fear. And, you know, that ending line, as you said, there's enough grass on this earth for a cross every second attached by strings. And the whole idea that, once again, a new person will be pulled into a web of lies, and the web of lies will become the strings, that control their movements, their thoughts, their decisions. I think this was definitely an excellent, strong write, and I think you all just had wonderful comments. And all right, where are we heading to next?
Master of Puppets by Eminem Fan 25. I guess I'll go read this one. He tried it one night after work. His friends were at the house. A girl he went to high school with pulled coke out of her glass. It startled so subtly just on a Friday night when he would have an awful week. It made him feel all right. It quickly turned to every week, beginning to take hold. His sense of humor went away, and he became quite cold. Before he knew it, he was hooked, a puppet on a string. He started selling all he owned. His life meant not a thing. He lost the job and all his friends and had nowhere to go. Not knowing how to fix his life, he joined the twisted show. If only he'd fully known that 9 times out of 10, when drugs are pulling all strings, the puppet master wins.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say, I really liked this one. I enjoy Eminem Fan's writing. He's just a wonderful rhyming poet. And I like how he took this on the idea of, rather than the puppet master being a person, it's the drugs or the addiction itself that gets control over your life and becomes the puppet master. I thought that was really cool. And Wayne, your thoughts?
It has a lot of meaning to it with about the drugs and going right through this guy's life and how he got hooked on drugs and lost his job. It's a pretty sad poem, but it kind of goes along with the Metallica theme. Everybody back then was doing drugs. I think all of us old people, or people are getting kind of old. I remember Metallica when they would do the rest of the groups. I remember I looked at all the groups. And I thought I didn't know about 3 of them. I think I kind of got away from the hard rock the Metallica rock a long time ago. So everybody's doing the Metallica thing because everybody can remember back 30 years ago and 20 years ago when it was a little bit younger. But this was a great, great, great poem, and it had a great storyline to it. And it's kind of a little sad, but that's just it's the way life is. He said it like it is, and it's a great poem. I loved it. Great job.
Absolutely. Yeah, I noticed the Alice in Hell from Annihilator and the Metallica seem to be the two albums written to the most. And I think a lot of people connect with Metallica. The interesting thing to me about Metallica is I know people who just are absolutely huge fans of theirs. And I know people who are into other heavy metal music that you know, are not fans of theirs because they don't think they're heavy metal enough. So it's always interesting to hear people's perspectives. But yeah, that was a great comment there. And Felon, your thoughts?
Oh, I really like this. I like how he actually went out on different with Masters of the Puppet. Like we were talking the other night, how one person can write this, another person can write that, just the same prompt. And I think this was another fine example of how certain prompts can pull things out of other people. And I like how he said he tried it one night after work. His friends were at his house. A girl who went to high school had pulled the coke out of her blouse. I like his cadence is right spot on, and it moves. You know, goes along so smoothly, you don't even really notice the rhyme. It just goes so smoothly. I like that. I like the fact that he caught that, and then he caught something that was edgy, raw, and dark, and I like that. And up to the times of what goes on in this world. So excellent job there, Eminem, or whoever it is, Eminem fan, or whatever.
Absolutely, and you're right. His flow is spot on. And it is always interesting to see how the same prompt moves people in different ways. And that's why sometimes I like to have contests where I only have one prompt just to see where one prompt takes people. But I think to open this up with that stanza that you point out at the beginning, stanza, Felon, where he says where it all started, because there's always that moment, like anybody who becomes an addict was not one, obviously, their whole life. There was that moment that they became, that they started down that path. And so Great observation there, Ellen. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, he waits till the second stanza to start off with it. Started out so subtly, but he actually started at the first stanza with how it came about to be in the first place. And then it kind of just walks its slow turn stanza by stanza to that which, what before he knew it, he was soaked a puppet on a string. He started selling all he owned, this life meant not a thing. That's when you know all things are gone at that point, when you're so badly ingrained and that you start selling off everything just for that next hit. You got to seek some help, because the end goes, you end up on the street homeless, nothing, and all of a sudden you're one of those people falling between the cracks.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that is a really important part also to bring up there, Rex, is that when you sometimes when you realize you need help, it's too late. Or as you mentioned, people fall between the cracks. You know, there's, you know, the help that is out there isn't always easy for people to get. So just an excellent comment. And I really do appreciate his perspective on the prompt, and definitely a strong light and very well done. All right, where are we heading to next?
Ghost Story by Time Teller. And, Phil, you want to give that a read?
Sure, I'd love to do that for Time Teller. Absolutely. And here we go, Ghost Story by Time Teller. Since early childhood, I always rocked my head and sleep, singing initially. When I closed my eyes, I only saw old men's faces coming at me in the dark. So rocking and singing meant I went from conscious to unconscious and avoided the house of mirrors. By my 30s, they were no longer old men, but middle-aged faces, the same faces, yet unrememberable. And then one day, one night, they had gone. Yet as they faded in the darkness, of age crept up. Fear of knowing what may lurk in the darkness became the reason for losing sleep. And he slipped from conscious to unconscious, comes from later and later nights, taught with company of spirits. These spirits have been friendly. My mate, Jack, and his buddy, Daniel, are often up late with me. End point.
Great read there, Fallon. I have to say, I really like this one. It's a well-told tale. It's interesting, though, because it's definitely shorter than I'm used to from Time Teller. He usually does some pretty long, epic writes. So it's cool to see somebody doing something a little bit different for themselves. I like that. And Rex, your thoughts?
All right, well, it starts off with, since early childhood, I always rocked my head to sleep, singing innately. Always saw old men, faces coming at me in the dark. That kind of hits on that notation of that veil that children often can see through, which kind of walks them over to the other side. But wanted to avoid that house of mirrors, going from conscious to unconscious, sort of rocking, singing, helped out with that. And by his later... they weren't old men, but middle-aged faces, same faces, but still not something that rememberable in the moment. And then they disappeared at one point. Now, coming up into the his upper ages, where he hits on that last stanza, he understands the notes when he goes from that end. It's that company of spirits are those that have passed on since those early days. So he was given a viewpoint way back when that he would be kept company in his old age with those friends who've actually passed in the meantime, and he'll get to share that time again, which is a little different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did like how that was a twist. And you're right, it does kind of, the beginning does speak to that veil that children often see through, you know. And, you know, I think, to me, how it was that at first it was the old men and then it was middle-aged men, what I think is it was always middle-aged men. But when you're a child, middle-aged people look old. You think they're old. I mean, it's like my maternal grandmother. She was really into art, and she had made this suit of armor. And when I was a child, I used to think it was just tall. I mean, it was humongous. But it turned out to be really not that much taller than I am now. Like, I'm like 5'4", and it's like, you know, maybe like a half an inch or so taller than me. And it's all about how I think that perspective changes. But I did also find that ending really intriguing there. So I thought that was really cool, and definitely some great observations there, Rex. And Felon, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, I really think what it reads, or my perception of it, is where he says early childhoods I would always rock, and then he says the men's faces come at him or whatever, and it says I went conscious to unconscious and avoided the house of mirrors. I think what he's trying to say here is that there was other people who drank in the home maybe when he was a child, and they were always loud enough and just, you know, making all kind of ruckus and noise and keeping him from awake, and that looking at them would be looking at himself later in life. And then when he become in his 30s, the middle-aged men, the older men, no longer old, they were middle-aged men, that would probably be his dad. His dad was, you know, in his 30s, he'd probably be in his 50s. So, I mean, I think that was probably his dad. And then he says one day, one night, they had gone. That's when the drink consumed him. And then he went on to, yet the faded, the darkness age crept up, fear knowing that the lurk in the darkness became his reason for losing sleep. And he knew that from a child that he lost sleep from, you know, whatever happened to those that drank around him. And now he's losing sleep because he's doing the same things that they were doing. He says, these spirits have been friendly. My mates, Jack, and his buddy Daniel are often up late with me. No longer does he need sleep because he's now enjoying the company of those who kept company of them long ago. That's what I gathered from it.
I like that. Yeah, you're right. And that would make sense. You know, the Jack Daniels. So, very cool. Great catch there, Felon. I like that. And, very cool observation. And I should have caught on to that, you know, but I was in there thinking, okay, who's Jack and who's Daniel? I was going too far off in left field. Like, I was trying to think if any of the bands, but he didn't put his prompt, so I was trying to think if any of the bands had members that were named Jack and Daniel, and then it was like, oh, geez, I shouldn't have been thinking that far out, you know. But obviously I need some Jack Daniels myself, but excellent comment there. And Wayne, your thoughts?
Yes. Yeah, I think I started out my understanding he's drinking his worries away. The way he grew older and the old men grew younger, and then finally he passed them up. He's looking out the musicians, and you know, he's like, first stanza he says he avoided the house of mirrors. He got into the music, he didn't consider himself like them. He never looked at himself like them. And as he got older, he passed the rock and roll singers up, and he got to become older, and that's why he's losing sleep over. He got a little older, and he started to set up with his buddy Jack and Daniels, and drinking his problems away. And it's a very good poem, and it's got a lot of meaning to it. I like the way he did this. He wrote a good way and good meaning. But he's drinking his problems away at night now because he's older.
Absolutely. Well said there, Wayne. And I have to say, I really liked and appreciated this poem, and I appreciated the fact that it, you know, gave food for thought and conversation, which is one of the things I appreciate about so much of the poetry that comes on to our show, is the opportunity for conversation and thought to be sparked. So, excellent right time teller, very well done, and great comments, everybody. All right, what are we up to next there, Rex?
And that's The Very Base of Hell by Jim Bellamy. And Wayne, would you give that a read for us, please?
I'll do my best. I don't see it up on the screen. I got to refresh here. Let me be right now. Let's see, it should be right there now. And there it is. And it goes like this. And at the very base of hell, it goes like this. And at the very base of hell, arms I stretched as if alive, but sensed the swiftness of love, turned hands asking from welcoming, wherein man's angels move, Against the Pits and Cold Phase, Laser Shot out of the Cloyd, Flames of Brain Dead Woman. It's rather like a downward spiral where marriage lives for just one day, or else a car man drives in lies smashed to pieces in the gray, willfully of life exile. Guns, bombs, and ice and gas, with trash the sun with thunder claps, and when where this world lies spins, of all the enormous fearings, the fragility of life was whispered in Christ's ears. Where the hell forms the rainbow spent from out of the serpent's bowels blow of the lakes, there is a sound heard that blasts mob music with and fatal place of the living dead. My death is masked in Coca-Cola. Words I had never heard before.
Okay, she said comment, Phelan, you comment first. And the very base of hell, I like that. And it says, it's rather like a downward spiral where marriage lives just for one day, or else the car man drives in lies smashed to pieces in the gray, willfulness of life exile. I like his verbiage in this a lot, I like his verbiage in this. I think that, especially where he says, from the serpent brows of the lakes, there is a sound heard that blasts mob music with the fatal fates of the dying, living dead. My death is masked in Coca-Cola. I think that I like the metaphoric of that, where he says from the serpent's brows. You know, have you ever looked? I don't think a serpent has any brows, but for him to put them on there, I think that's pretty damn cool and very, very different. So this is an excellent writing, and I think it just keeps with the prompt.
Nicely said, Fel. And Wayne, you got to read that. What'd you think?
There's a lot of phrases in here that kind of caught me off guard when I was reading it. He had words in there like askance. I'm not sure what that just kind of threw me off. And Cloyd, he had some good words in there, but it's kind of, every time I was reading, I was trying to figure out what he's trying to say. But it's a very good poem, well written, and the thrash, but we'll pass the sun, thunderclaps. I'm not sure what that means either. It's kind of, he had a lot of those words that kind of caught me off guard, and I was trying to catch the meaning of the poem. But it's a good poem all through, and the death is masked in Coca-Cola. That's a good way to end the poem. But I'm still trying to put the pieces together because I didn't read it very well. I'm still trying to put the pieces together. It's a very good poem.
Thank you very much there, Wayne. All right. That thought with my death is masked in Coca-Cola is kind of has me thinking of addiction at the moment. But there are two things. At the very base of hell, arms outstretched as if alive, kind of gets you that note of at the very base, maybe the base of the skull. One's mind, and then he hits on that it's rather like a downward spiral where marriage lives for just one day, or else the car man drives in lies smashed to pieces in the gray wilfulness of life's exile. It hits on the note of being almost brain dead, not really thinking, everything being covered up by the thought of what his death mask is masked in Coca-Cola. That could be a thought to let's see, Coca-Cola is full of caffeine, which is a drug in and of itself, so it might walk itself in the fact that we kind of drown ourselves in certain things and we end up brain dead for one reason or another. Now that thought, the fragility of life must whisper in Christ's ears, kind of hits on that sort of losing faith, especially with the guns, bombs, knives, gas, will trace the sun with thunderclaps, and where this world lies cleansed of all her enamored fearing. The fearing, us, we. I do like the serpent brows. That kind of gives the notion to the horned asp. And maybe, again, that might refer down to the thought of where once it strode through the Garden of Eden, and now we're poisoned with those thoughts that took us out of that idyllic atmosphere and put us in a place where we actually have to know sin and understand the thought of nakedness past the original intention. No, but Pam, you back yet?
I am, yes. And thank you for that, everyone. I always appreciate it, Jim Bellamy's poetry. It's very intelligent. and I didn't get to read this one thoroughly, but I have to say that when I read it earlier, the it struck me all the way through as a really strong write, but I really like, it's rather like a downward spiral where marriage lives for just one day or else the car man drives in. And I also really like where he says, where hell forms a rainbow spent from out of the serpent brow of the lakes. It gave thought to the rainbow serpent, which, if I remember right, was what formed the sky, or was it what formed, it had something to do with the voodoo religion. But I especially found it intriguing that end line, my death is masked in Coca-Cola. I felt that there was really in that line a connection to the diabetes pandemic, the pandemic of especially Americans of consuming too much sugar. So really just a thought-provoking write all the way through and very well done. And
the rainbow serpent is a common deity often seen as the creator god, something within the Aboriginal people.
Oh, cool. Well, that's awesome to know. Yeah, he's always getting, that's one of the reasons I like researching is because when you know those little tidbits, when you look those little tidbits up, it really makes a difference of the depth of the poem, your perspective of the poem, and it gives you the opportunity to learn. So I always like that. All right, Rex, what do we have next?
The Hunting by Costas Lagos. I guess I'll give this a read. Primordial spirit now awake, the hunt is on the loose once again. Let them pray, let them feed, this night belongs to them. See how they sweep the land, our cities, their killing fields. The moon is painted red as the portal to their world opens wide. They are here, find shelter if you can. Do not look behind while you run. The hunting has begun. Hide until the night will pass. Hide until they will return to their world. Hide because there is nowhere to run. And as the old shaman chants, let the fear reign in your heart. And we took Astrodon, Crack the Sky.
Yeah, and that was a great choice. That was some really epic artwork. And he really puts within this brevity a real epic feel to it. The hunter's on the loose once again, let them pray. And I like how, he uses the word pray, P-R-E-Y, but uses it in a way that it comes across as, praying, offering a prayer. Let them feed, this night belongs to them, see how they sweep the land, our cities, their killing field. I like how he takes us, this has a very mythological feel to it, and yet by saying our cities, their killing field, he brings it into a modern day setting. And, I also, this is wonderful all the way through because it flows from one line to the next perfectly, but I also really like hide until the night will pass, hide until they will return to their world, hide because there is nowhere to run. And as the old shaman chants, let the fear reign in your heart. Honest, this is one of those poems that I could so see being set to heavy metal music. It's got a wonderful, lyrical quality to it. And I like how in the end, it's all about the fear that encompasses the heart, the reaction of the fear that cannot be released. So I think this is just a really cool write and very well done. And Felon, your thoughts?
I too like that line. I'm envious of it. It says, run until you can't run because there's nowhere to run. Go hide because there's nowhere to run. Because that is the most creepiest thing you can think of, because no matter where you run, you there's nowhere to hide. It's like, oh, shit. It's like that panic, like a Chinese fire drill, everything going this way to that way, and there's really no no quorum behind what you're doing. I think this is a nice, creepy little dark ride. I think it's short but sweet, but yet it still puts a little chill up your spine, and I like that. I mean, it's kind of like, ooh, okay, I know what you're talking about.
Right.
And, so I enjoyed this a great deal. Good job there, buddy.
Absolutely. Absolutely great comment there, Phil, and thank you. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, it kind of gives notion to what Halloween's supposed to be all about. Primordial spirits now awake. It does kind of crawl back to that essence of that which comes from thousands of years ago, the primitive brain, and that which fear really walks itself on, and that's which crawls in the darkness, that which we fear the most, because we used to fear the darkness. So darkness still holds its essence and its power within us and over us.
I like that. That's a really great observation. And yeah, with that opening line, primordial spirits, it does give that feel about, you know, like the original intent of reasons for Halloween. So excellent comment. And all right, what do we got next, Rex?
All right.
Guess they're humming the Jeopardy theme song.
Well, Midnight Rain by Dmitri Kropotkin. And you've got a soundbite.
All right. And this is an off-topic right. It was put on the Twisted Tuesday show. And we'll go ahead and get that SoundCloud and push play.
Feeble, feral drumbeats of darkly chilling rain tap upon my house's back like faint remembered pain. Neither drop nor single winces, vying for its space. Both have run the crooked courses in their chosen race. Fearful drops conspire in trickles, shingles set them free. Silken threads of shuttered dreams enshroud the once of me. Peering through the shadow veil of life's last gloomy sky, my consolation has to be I didn't cave or cry. My bearing was not broken, my countenance uncowed. My battle cry at final stand was given clear and loud. Unbowed, I rose from the wake of this filthy, brutish shower. Despite the miles of merciless muck, I have won the hour. And though I know my name won't shine from trophy case or mantle, now I know there's not a thing that I can't face or handle. Even now, years removed, my courage surges at the thought how this war annealed me for the battles I have fought. And so, my fellow warrior, an oath is laid before you now. You are stronger than you trust and more brave than you'd allow.
Lee, Dmitri, thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. I really like this, right? I like how there's an emotive darkness, but what I liked is that it becomes a rite about victory, about overcoming, and about how you face those challenges in life. And I really, really like neither drop nor shingle winces vying for its faith. Both have run the crooked courses in their chosen race. I like that whole idea that, you know, the races we choose, we have to see through. And I also like that it kind of gives me that idea, the thought of for everything there is a time and place. Like that song, for everything there is a season, turn, turn, turn. I don't know why it makes me think of that song. I also really like Unbowed I rose from the wake of this filthy, brutish shower. Despite the miles of merciless muck, I have won the hour. And sometimes that's what victory is about. It's about winning the small battles one at a time. And so excellent, right, and very well done. And Felon, your thoughts?
For me, I really like this because, as he says about the rain or whatever, I am a chicken. I am not going to lie. I'm a scaredy cat of the fucking bad weather. I was in a tornado as a child, and I will lose my freaking marbles if a thunderstorm comes up. I just lose my mind. And he's basically, to me, speaking to me, saying, hey, you got this. No matter how bad it gets, and even the rain beating down on the house, and the shingles are coming off because of the wind and such, that you got this. Every doesn't mean that that's going to happen to you again. That just hang in there, and that he was able to fight, and he was able to persevere through his fear of thunderstorms, and I can too. So that's what I got from it. I mean, to me, a thunderstorm is very scary and creepy, and I hate them because you never know what's going to happen. So, excellent job there, buddy.
Yep. Absolutely, and well said there. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm going to go with an extended metaphor because he hits on that first stanza. Tap upon my house's back like faint remembered pain. Kind of hits on the notion of that which brings you down, life's little breaking moments that weigh heavily. Neither drop nor shingle winces vying for its space. Both have run the crooked courses in their chosen race. Talk about life and how things have walked, whether it's love, romance, or work, or just life in general. Fearful drops conspire and trickle. Kind of hits on that notion of it'll come in spurts, and it'll come moments where it just kind of drips on you. And then he hits on life's glass gloomy sky. My consolation has to be I didn't cave or cry. Is that notion? I bent, but I didn't break. And then the thought coming near the end would be the warrior standing up to that which life throws at you and letting the water of that life run off your back so you can actually stand tall and say, yes, I lived it despite the angst, the pain, the whatever else that came along with it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like that as a great observation about the idea of bending but not breaking. So very well said. And all right, where are we going to next?
All I Loved by Casey Dan. You got SoundCloud for that one too.
All right, here we go.
All I Loved by Casey Day. This poem is inspired by Alone by Edgar Allan Poe. I grew up in a fragile home where I spent my time alone. Blocking out the pain's causation told me it was disassociation. Tried to drown me when I was 3. Changed his mind, my daddy. Still went to jail later on, but not for murder. Who'd have thought? At 13, I became anorexic. My hair fell out and I felt sick. They locked me up, no hesitation. Didn't know about the molestation. And because my home was filled with hate, I became a ward of the state. Didn't know of a solution. I was put into an institution. They forced me to take some pills. They made me vomit, very ill. But I didn't have a choice. No freedom there. I had no voice. I decided to run away. I was kidnapped, drugged, and raped. That's when I realized there was no escape. So I started fighting for my own way. The doctor said I'd gone insane, but I was transforming the pain. Made it out at 17, graduated, smart and clean. There is much more to the story, but it's old, rough territory. Now you've read the heavy storm that came to me when I was born. If there's one line that brings me home, it's all I loved alone.
great read there, Casey. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. I have to say that one hits really hard, and I kind of wish I had a chance to read it more carefully ahead of time, so that I could have given a trigger warning, like I like to do when poems touch on difficult subjects. But I appreciate the raw honesty of this, and how, on a technical level, I also really appreciate how she stuck with the meter, the rhyme, and the flow of the Edgar Allan Poe poem alone, and just really emotive and visceral imagery throughout that really makes you take a hard look at how difficult life can be. And again, you know, there's really, it's subtle, but to me at the end, there is that victory, of moving past what you grew up like, what your family was like, and becoming your own person. I also like that she mentioned in the end line that the line from the Edgar Allan Poe poem she relates to, because that's one of the most important things about poetry. We find those lines, those words that we connect to emotionally, that we feel represents our own inner thoughts and our own situations that we went through. So I really appreciate her writing this. It's powerful, it's emotive, and it's very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, it rings. Well, she did it through a Poe's piece, Alone, but an excellent representation based on what is apparently an emotional truth that has been brought to bear and walks itself even in the ugliness of that which is and that which went through, that it still walks out the other side. All I loved Alone. And kind of gives an offering of the fact that she is, even though she's come to terms with everything and is in a far better place than she was at the beginning of everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And, all right. And Felon, did you have any thoughts you'd like to share?
Oh, yes. I think this is a very, very powerful write, and I mean, hats off to her, because I think what she's doing is giving a hump back to the one that thinks that thought that she would never have a voice to speak her mind and to grow up and be and rise above what this person did to her. And I think that speaks volumes to her, and it just, wow, just blew me out of the water. I think that she's a very strong person, and I said, just keep fighting, and nothing is dead unless you take the breath from it. So I think that just breathe, just keep breathing and speaking your mind and giving yourself a voice. Very powerful.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. Amen to that. All right, and what do you got next, Rex?
Telltale Heart by Victoria Frost, and this one's yours.
All right. A Telltale Heart by Victoria Frost, and it goes like this. I know not why I fear these hallways darkened with the absent light, filled with lifeless pale blue eyes hidden within the black of night, to hear the creaking of the floorboards settling deep into their slumber, popping with the growing weight of the softly creeping lumber. I cannot help but hold my breath and watch my chamber door, feel the gaze of glistening eyes, and watch the shadows flood the floor. I've watched each night as it crawls closer one small inch at a time, heard the sliding of its feet, the dark foreshadowing of his crime. Night by night he comes closer, my feeble eyes can't look away, praying this is just a nightmare that fades within the light of day. Shuddered as I try to hide, if I can't see them, they can't see me. Yet I feel my mattress groan as if it dares to disagree. I close my eyes, squinted shut, my covers well above my head. Felt a piercing in my ribs, the trickle of blood upon my head, upon my bed. I gasp awake. It was a dream, a nightmare, I presume. The moon is shining big and bright. I'm safe here in my room. Yet the doors opened wide. Black hallway greet my gaze. Where are the candles to light the night, the soft run gold of the constant blaze? My footsteps paddle through the halls. I call out to no avail. It seems my home's without a soul, no one to hear me wail, no one to hear my lonely plea or face these consequences, mistake this madness of my mind in overreaction of their senses. And poem. I have to say, I'm a really big fan of this one. She has just spot-on rhyme and flow that works so well with a playwright. And she was inspired by the Telltale Heart. And what I really liked about this, and she's done this before, we did Edgar Allan Poe before, and she did the view of what's his lover's name in the one poem, The Raven?
Lenore,
yeah. She wrote from the point of view of Lenore, and here she writes from the point of view, instead of the point of view of the madman, the killer, she writes from the point of view of the victim, of the old man that lay in the bed. And I like the way she put the space between the end of the first part and the second part to create that kind of that pause, that tension. So this is wonderful rhyme and flow and great use of using a unique perspective. So very well done. And Felon, your thoughts?
Oh, I love this. For one, The Telltale Heart is my all-time favorite ever poem. And for her to write on the behalf of the old man, it just, wow, I'm just in awe because I still can hear him, you know, hollering, you know, in his, oh, mighty God, no, 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 they heard, they suspected, they knew, you know, they were making a mockery of my heart. It's like, you know, I love that part where he's, like, yelling and cussing the old man because he's already dead, but yet that heart, boom, 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 but yet he's the only one that really hears it, and it's his guilty conscience that brings him to tell what he had done. He was so nice to the man before, you know, the old man the week prior to killing him. And, you know, he even tells him, look, I was nice to you the week prior to killing him. And I like that she actually does a rendition of the older man. So this, wow, just an awe. Great job there, Victoria.
Absolutely. Great comment. I have to agree. That is one of the all-time best Edgar Allan Poe stories. And Rex, your thoughts?
I kind of take this as almost childlike, those the things that they fear, and you get that the door closed, yet it opens. You see the shadows coming in closer. It's kind of much like the closet door or what lurks under the bed. There's a fear of being alone in there. That trickle of blood upon my bed, that's just the back end of that, that's where you usually wake up. And that's exactly why that large space. I gasp, it was a dream, a nightmare, I presume. The moon is shining big and bright. I'm safe here in my room. Again, and that's thought through a childhood. And yet, my footsteps paddle through the halls. I called out to no avail. It seems my home's without a soul. No one to hear me wail. Again, kind of a note to fear of being left alone and being in this large, drafty house where you can hear the floorboards creak, and no one to hear my lonely plea or face these consequences, mistake this madness of my mind, and overreaction of the senses. It kind of hints back again to a child's fear.
It does kind of have a childlike fear, which I think works well, and works well also for it being the character of the old man, because, you know, I think oftentimes as people age, especially if they're going through like an Alzheimer's or something, they become more childlike. But I do like how there's kind of that duality to this fight, and that's a really great observation, Rex. Well, I have to say this has been an awesome show. Thank you, Rex, as always, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to Felon, Cal, and Wayne for calling in and hanging out with us. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Make sure to return for our Halloween show, Rhythm and Rhyme, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time on Sunday, and bring us your Halloween song-inspired rites. And all right, everyone, have a good night.
Good night, everybody.